Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Guys want to play. There's still a season to be finished out. I still think we can play a few games and then go into the playoffs, crown a champion. Let's go. Let's play. The country needs it too, man. We need something to cheer for. We need something to get excited about. I mean, watching cornhole on ESPN ain't it.
Mark Cuban urging that the sport comes back. And I think everybody wants sports back, but it's really hard to imagine all the big sweaty bodies breathing on each other and banging into each other and that all that happening, finding a way to somehow do that as safely as we need to. Let's talk some basketball with Vince Goodwill of Yahoo Sports, senior NBA writer on Twitter at Vince Goodwill, and on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Vince, what's happening, man? You good?
Yes, sir. How you doing, Dan?
I'm good. I was intrigued by the conversation that you had with your Yahoo teammates in Sirat Sohi and Chris Haynes, and all very, very smart people, by the way. You guys have a hell of an NBA staff going there. Talking about, are we paying enough attention to the 93-94 Bulls? As in The Last Dance, it's all kind of being glossed over that they were really damn good without Michael Jordan.
I don't think that they really were. I think that there was a lot of things that were at play to that team winning two fewer games than the 92-93 team. I think we tend to forget the details as time goes along. Like, if you remember that 92-93 Bulls team was going for its third straight title. And as you know, teams usually coming off of those type of playoff runs and you're keeping the same core together, you kind of ease your way into the season. You know what I'm saying? You've been playing into June 3 or 4 straight years, so you can't be ramped up all the time. So the win total doesn't matter as much to me. They didn't need home court advantage and everything else. 93-94 is a totally different thing because you're motivated and it's a different, slightly different roster. You're tweaking things. Cool coach got there. You know, you're adding pieces. B.J. Armstrong has started to emerge a little bit. He wound up being an all-star starter. But as a whole, to me, and this is not, and I promise you guys, this is not Detroit guy. This is historian here. The Eastern Conference in the 1993-94 was historically bad. The Atlanta Hawks, those Atlanta Hawks, were the top seed in the East. And they traded Dominique Wilkins at the midseason point. He wasn't even there anymore toward the end of the year. And if you look at, like, the 94 All-Star team, just, you know, yeah, B.J. was an All-Star. Horace Grant was an All-Star. Only time those guys made it. Charles Oakley was an All-Star. You know, Mookie, right. Blaylock, like, solid players, but no real juggernauts. No, you know, this isn't, you know, Hall of Famer of Hall of Famers. And sometimes you win games, you know, that you shouldn't. And I think to that degree, sometimes they won a few extra games then they shouldn't have. And that's why I kind of laugh at the whole Scottie Pippen should have been MVP thing that people like to bring up. And as my final point, if the Bulls were so much better without Michael Jordan, how come they were a 500 outfit in 94-95 before he came back?
Well, that's a strong counter argument to when you start looking at the win totals there. And I think your point's well taken about the Bulls in that last championship year knowing how to cruise and knowing when, all right, we don't have to go full bore. That when we looked at some of the minutes totals and we say, oh, my God, look how hard they went after it. And Jordan would play 40 minutes a night and play all 82 games. That you're right. It wasn't load management in saying we're actually not going to play, we're going to rest. But they knew when to turn it on, when not to turn it on, when it just wasn't their night, when it wasn't worth it. That's absolutely true. That in a lot of those games, it was like, look, as long as we get the seed that we need, get the situation that we need, take care of business just to get us in the best possible position to win a championship. That is absolutely the case. It wasn't the same kind of load management, but it was an understanding of marshaling their resources.
You have to be careful. When you're going for your third straight title, you are battling so much more than whatever the competition is. I mean, you look at the 93 Bulls, you look at the 98 Bulls, you see so many similarities. I don't even know if you paid as much attention to it. You're talking about a team that didn't have home court advantage in the finals because they knew they didn't necessarily need it. You know, you can win in any building at any point whatsoever. The 93 Bulls went down 0-2 to the Knicks. The 98 Bulls, you know, was in a dogfight with the Indiana Pacers and needed every bit of the seventh games and home court advantage to beat the Indiana Pacers. And the Pacers were not some historically great team. I don't look at the Pacers of 98 with Reggie Miller and Rick Smith and all those guys and say, man, the Bulls really went up against their equal. I don't look at the 93 Knicks and say, man, the Bulls went up against their equal. So I think we have to be careful when we're contextualizing all these different things. That's why I laughed. I genuinely laughed, Dan Bernstein, at the mere thought that someone would say that Michael Jordan would have won 8 straight titles had he not retired. Because at the end of both three-peats, he was on fumes, the franchise was on fumes, and they all needed to hit the reset button. And I know God shall strike me down for this, but Dan, Jerry Krause did a pretty damn good job in terms of retooling the Bulls around Jordan and Pippen from the end of the first three-peat to the start of the second three-peat.
I did some of the math on that last team and just looking at some statistical vectors for where things were headed. Jordan was in decline. Even yes. in that last championship, by the numbers, if we start looking at offensive rating and defensive rating, it was his worst full season. And even though some of the counting stats were really good, some of the advanced metrics were not. Pippen, after he hurt his back, was never the same. He was a shell of himself after that. You know, everybody, that whole thing was with and Rodman only played 35 NBA games after that. You know, that was toast. That was done. So it would have taken a lot of retooling. I mean, an immense amount of retooling and a whole hell of a lot of luck for that thing to have continued. I have very, very, very strong doubts. And you're right that people have baked in this idea that Jerry Krause broke up a Tatiana. No, first of all, no, he didn't necessarily break it up. And we've had that confirmed by a lot of the people involved. It was over. And that's why The Last Dance felt the way it did. And the way it does in this, because it was over for a lot of reasons. It was a matter of just could they do it?
Well, you know what's funny, Dan? I feel like you've been reading my laptop because of a column that's coming out later today on Yahoo Sports. Some of those same things. Yeah, when you look at Michael Jordan, and I will say this to a degree, like he was still the best player in basketball in 1998. But Shaquille O'Neal was coming, like in terms of figuring things out in terms of maturation, in terms of being, you know, a force on both ends of the floor. He was coming. But Michael Jordan was so much greater than everybody else, and all of his other MVP runs, and even in 93 and 97, where he didn't win the MVP, but was still clearly the best player in the game. By 98, you know, turning 35, you know, that means a lot. Scottie Pippen had that back injury where he never made another All-Star team. He was never the same, you know, two-way leader that Jordan would have needed him to be. You know, and Dennis Rodman, we saw that was coming off the rails a little bit too, because he needed a Las Vegas trip. He was 37 years old, Dan. You know, he had turned 37. His birthday was yesterday. So, you know, that's during the 98 playoffs when you're turning 37 years old and you got torn ligaments in your hand and your body is starting to break down. He was no spring chicken. And add to the fact that Michael Jordan had, you know, he had that cigar cutter accident in the offseason of 98. So even if you come back and you have a 50-game truncated season, you have to explain to me how Michael Jordan with a severed finger, that, you know, you can't grip a ball the way that you used to, and who knows if you'll be able to play, you know, all 50 games and everything else and all these other different factors. There's an element to Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf being heroic in this, because think about how much of Chicago Bull fandom relative to LeBron James is built in by the fact that Michael Jordan was 6-0 in the NBA Finals. I would venture to tell you that Dan Bernstein, that had the Bulls made the Finals in 95 or had the Bulls made the Finals in 99 and lost to better teams, it would not have diminished their greatness at all. I don't necessarily take away from you getting to the Finals and not winning. But in today's 6-0, or you lost, or he's 3-6 in the Finals, or every other great team is lost, to some degree, their legacy is enhanced by the fact that we didn't see them fall, that we saw them broken up, and that their mystique is a little bit greater, because, you know, there's a scene that I'm not sure, because I haven't seen the documentary, I haven't seen these last two episodes, where Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen are in the bowels of the Delta Center. They're yelling out 6, 6, 6, 6, and not like Delta 666, but 6 titles. And Jordan laughs and says, "You can say whatever you want, but they can't win until we quit." And he was actually right, because had they come back and played again, somebody else probably would have beat them.
We're talking with Vince Goodwill on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. And there's another report that's out that Scottie Pippen is unhappy with how he's being portrayed in The Last Dance. And I'm thinking, you know, come on, tough noogies. Anything that has improperly portrayed Scottie Pippen, and that's a bad look. When he said regarding his choice to not enter the game in that year we're talking about, he said, "It's one of those incidents where I wish it never happened, but if I had a chance to do it over again, I probably wouldn't change it." Well, why the hell wouldn't you? You know, what's wrong with saying it was a stain on my legacy, it was selfish, and I shouldn't have done it? But he says he wouldn't have changed it. Why wouldn't you change it?
Allow me to point out the hypocrisy of a Chicago sport fan. Can I do that for a second? Now, Dan, this may get you some angry phone calls later today. But,
okay.
You know, after The Last Dance, that episode, you know, I was watching ESPN. I saw, you know, Jackie McMullen talking about, you know, how Scottie Pippen should not be defined by the worst mistake of his basketball career. And a lot of the conversation was saying, you know, a lot of this was a little unfair to him and everything else. But you went on this documentary and said you wouldn't do anything differently. After all the details have been fleshed out 20 years later and everything else. Also, Scottie Pippen, understand that you weren't the last second guy. You were the team guy. You were a critical part of that franchise, but you were not the number one guy. You were not built to wear those clothes. Those clothes were built for Michael Jordan. Hence why I would contend the greatest moment of Scottie Pippen's career was, you know, pointing towards the Jumpman logo at the bottom of his shoe and telling Michael Jordan to come back. Like, that's, to me, is the greatest moment, because it's an acknowledgement that, hey, I can't do this. And here's the hypocrisy of Chicago on two levels, Dan. About 7 years ago, LeBron James had qualified for his first NBA Finals in Miami. And Scottie Pippen had the gall to go on TV and say, I think LeBron James is better than Michael Jordan. And y'all let him slide for that. Y'all have literally let him slide for him saying something in 2011, not 2016, not this year, 2011, before the man won anything. And Chicagoans are very, very tough when it comes to forgiving their athletes. Don't we know that? Chicago is very, very difficult, Dan Bernstein, when it comes to, man, I made one regrettable mistake, and even though I'm one of you, I'm a Chicagoan, I grew up here on the West Side, I made one mistake out of emotion, Isaiah Thomas, and you guys will never, ever forgive me. But yet, Scottie Pippen does all this, could have possibly cost you guys a shot at a fourth ring, not to mention following Hubert Davis because he overhelped on the Knicks in game 5 2 games later and cost you a game there. And you guys are also forgiving. Allow me to point out the hypocrisy there. Do you not see what I mean, Dan Bernstein?
Well, I'm not going to give you too much latitude on the Isaiah thing because I don't think
one mistake. One mistake defining someone. Dan Bernstein, tell me the difference.
Well, at least for some of us, because I don't think it's necessarily just one mistake. You had the freezing out of Jordan in the All-Star game.
Did that really happen?
Yes. Yeah, and I've Terry Bores has the receipts on that. And he was on the show last week talking about the conversations that he heard regarding how that went down. And some of the antipathy toward Isaiah Thomas also has to do with his behavior as a Knicks executive. It has to do with some of the awful stuff that he did to the owners
of
the Continental
Basketball
Association.
We're talking about his relationship with Chicago. What do you guys care about what he did with the New York Knicks? That has nothing to do with anything, and you know it.
I can speak personally, but I do think that Chicago sports fans have the bandwidth to make their decisions on whether or not they like somebody based on a totality of the body of work. And there are plenty of good reasons to not like Isaiah Thomas. And because he wasn't, it was really, and you know, Terry pointed this out too, we talked last week, the guy who should be more intensely disliked is the guy who was actually knocking Jordan out of the air every time and trying to injure him, and that's Bill Laimbeer, who doesn't seem to invoke the same antipathy from Chicago sports fans, because that's a guy who really, he could have ruined everything. He one bad landing, and, you know, we're talking about another Derrick Rose situation because this guy was so violent.
I can't necessarily disagree with you on that one. I'm just merely pointing out that Isaiah Thomas was one of Chicago's own. And if I'm talking about someone who lived in Chicago, Dan, for a number of years, mm-hmm. watching the work that he did with on the west side of Chicago, like being on the ground with people, helping out, donating time, not donating, just being there, time, resources, money, all of that type of stuff. And people are still holding on to, he didn't shake Michael Jordan's hand. Please.
I think the larger picture is people are holding on to Jordan doesn't like him much more than it is the one thing that he did. It is the fact that Jordan himself has set a tone where I think, regardless of anything, that if he and Jordan mended fences in some way, shape, or form, if they ever wanted to, that would change things. That I don't think the active thought is he led that walk off. I think it's overall people respond to the fact that, yeah, that he's dead to us because he's dead to Mike.
And how bad is that? Like, how much like a following culture is that those two men, if they have issues with each other, that's for them to shake out. Isaiah's relationship in Chicago should stand on its own. I mean, not to get off on a tangent, because I know you didn't call me. I know we weren't here for that.
It's plenty. No, it's real stuff. I don't care.
But to me, I feel like Chicago, his relationship with that city should stand on its own, regardless of, you know, if a rivalry is a rivalry. And I, you know, as a Detroiter, like, I look pretty fondly on, you know, watching those games. Those games, you know, shaped my fandom. It shaped my perspective on wanting to be a sports writer in this business, like wanting to get behind and tell those stories. So, you know, everything about that, to me, there's a level of beauty to that. But when it's over, you know, and someone is a native of that city on the west side of that city and has done some of the best work, when you talk about, you know, the way that Chicago as a city has been perceived through the years and some of the negative labels that have been attached to people. And Isaiah Thomas has been on the ground with people, doing work with the gangs, getting peace days and everything else. And people can't, quote unquote, forgive him because Michael Jordan says he doesn't like him. You got to be better. I think that's short-sighted. Because if they kiss and make up and that's genuine on them, then Chicago follows suit?
I think some do. Yeah, I do. But I also think that Michael Jordan isn't the only person who dislikes Isaiah Thomas. There are a lot of people who have crossed him. There are a lot of people that he's done wrong by. Maybe he's done well in the community, but there are a lot of people throughout the game, whether in New York or in some offices somewhere, that don't have nice things to say about how he's treated people. So people are complicated. I don't think we got a, you know, it's a white hat or a black hat here that we just have heroes and villains. I think we're dealing with complicated human beings and the outsized power that Michael Jordan remains, his brand, his
Absolutely.
Word, you know, we're seeing it right now. This is cool. I'm glad the discussion kind of turned this way because I didn't foresee it, but I've really, really enjoyed
I'm
it.
Sorry to hijack the whole thing.
No,
Dad.
Don't. No, don't apologize at all. No, that's genuine stuff. This is what talk radio is all about. That's what it's for. Vincent Goodwill, you think we're going to have basketball or not?
Yeah, I think so. I'll keep this short. I think they don't want to write a check back to the networks, to ESPN and Turner. I think I can foresee a possibility of the next season starting in late December, but this season finishing up as late as October.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I hope they can do it safely because we obviously all Absolutely. Want it back. But we'll see where this thing goes because we're not in charge. Vinny Goodwill, thanks, man. This is really fun.
Hey, appreciate it, man. You guys take it easy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.